Indigenous person. My family has been through enough. As Indigenous people, we have been through enough. So don't lose that fight. Remember what your ancestors went through to get you here. That strength passes on. So please continue to resist these colonial and settler colonial and just genocidal ideologies that are going around. We will not let them win. We have not let them win. We are still here. We are breathing. And that means they have failed. So continue to help them fail. Continue to fight back. Continue to crush these systems. And thanks again for listening to Two Indians Ramble, to listening to all the music from our community. You are never alone. You are with community. We are here to fight with you. We are here to fight for you. Do not give up hope. We'll be back next Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I've been your host, Jack. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll see you next week. Stay strong, Indian Country.
Listening to KBOOP.
Are you a fan of early rock and roll, doo-wop, rhythm and blues, and 70s rock? If so, The Roots of Rock and Roll is the show for you, and KBOO Portland is the place to be Friday afternoons at 3. Dale Farr will give you a history lesson from the birth of rock and roll through the 50s and 60s. And Ray Bodwell will mine the 60s and 70s for the deep cuts, hidden gems, and variety that you won't hear on generic classic rock stations. So tune in to The Roots of Rock and Roll, Fridays at 3 p.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
Yo, this is M1 from Dead Prez.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. News, views, and hip-hop.
I'm Eddie Zane.
And I'm Helen Zia.
And we are on Hard Knock Radio.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I think they don't truly understand me, you know? Because they don't.
Change the world as we change ourselves. Die from the sicknesses if we don't seek the health. All eyes be my witness when I speak what's felt. Full house on my hands, the cards I was dealt. 3 K's, 2 A's in America. I'm just a black space born out the nebula. And everything I do will say today that's worthwhile. With assurance by your action and your first child, I begin my first now. Sometimes I speak and I feel like it ain't my words. Like I'm just a vessel channeling inside this universe. I feel my ancestors arrested inside of me. It's like they want me to shoot my chance and change the society. But how do I go about it? Tell me where I start. My destiny rerouted when I chose to follow heart. You told to follow suit, but tell me what it do for you. Except where you down, now you trapped inside the cubicle they built for us. The first step in the change is to take notice. Realize the real gains that they tried to show us.
300 plus years of them cold shoulders. Your 300 million of it still got no focus. Sorry, America, but I will not be your soldier. Obama just wasn't enough, I need some more closure. And Donald Trump is not equipped to take this country over. Let's face facts, cause we know what's the real motives. In the land of the free is full of freeloaders. Leave us dead in the street to be the organ donors. They disorganized, my people made us all loners. Still got the last names of our slave owners. In the land of the free is full of freeloaders. Leave us dead in the street to be the organ donors. They disorganized, my people made us all loners. Yeah, we can't change the world unless we change ourselves. Die from the sicknesses if we don't seek the help. All eyes be my witness when I speak with felt. Full house on my hands, the cards I was dealt. 3 K's, 2 A's in America. I'm just a black space born out the nebula. And everything I do is say today that's worthwhile. With assurance by your action. Trickery in the system, put my niggas in prison. All our history hidden, ain't no liberty given. We all fit the description of what the document's written. We been lacking the vision and barely making a living. We too worried to fit in, while they been benefiting. Every time you submit it, we all guilty admitted. The law won't get you acquitted, but you still ask for forgiveness. Put opiates and syringes, then inject his religion. Now many times I gotta tell you I'm a man in the mission. Many times I gotta tell you I don't need no permission. A human with supervision, ain't no living condition. I'm reaching out to my children, just hoping that they will listen. Start a new coalition against corrupt politicians. It's not enough about the too many murder convictions. Nothing family evicted, nothing black man the victim. That's as real as it's getting. You should take recognition. In the land of the free is full of freeloaders. Leave us dead in the street to be the organ donors. They disorganized, my people made us all loners. Still got the last names of our slave owners. In the land of the free is full of freeloaders. Leave us dead in the street to be the organ donors. They disorganized, my people made us all loners. Yeah. We can't change the world unless we change ourselves. Die from the sicknesses if we don't seek the help. All eyes be my witness when I speak with felt. Full house on my hands, the cards I was dealt. 3 K's, 2 A's in America. I'm just a black space born out the nebula. And everything I do is say today that's worthwhile. With assurance by your action and your first child. Yeah.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. On July 5th, 1852, Frederick Douglass, the great abolitionist, gave a keynote address at an Independence Day celebration and asked, "What to the slave is the 4th of July?" Douglass was a powerful orator, often traveling 6 months out of the year to give lectures on abolition. His speech, given at an event commemorating the signing of the Declaration of Independence, was held at Corinthian Hall in Rochester, New York. It was a scathing speech in which Douglass stated, "This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn." We begin today's program with a portion of his speech, "The Meaning of the 4th of July for the Negro," read by actor and ancestor Ozzie Davis.
The meaning of July 4th for the Negro. The papers and placards say that I am to deliver a 4th of July oration. This certainly sounds large and out of the common way for me. It is true that I have often had the privilege to speak in this beautiful hall and to address many who now honor me with their presence. But neither their familiar faces nor the perfect gauge I think I have of Corinthian Hall seems to free me from embarrassment. The fact is, ladies and gentlemen, the distance between this platform and the slave plantation from which I escaped is considerable, and the difficulties to be overcome in getting from the latter to the former are by no means slight. That I am here today is, to me, a matter of astonishment as well as of gratitude. You will not, therefore, be surprised if in what I have to say, I evince no elaborate preparation, nor grace my speech with any high-sounding exordium. With little experience and with less learning, I have been able to throw my thoughts hastily and imperfectly together. And trusting to your patient and generous indulgence, I will proceed to lay them before you. This For the purpose of this celebration is the 4th of July. It is the birthday of your national independence and of your political freedom. This, to you, is what the Passover was to the emancipated people of God. It carries your minds back to the day and to the act of your great deliverance, and to the signs and to the wonders associated with that act and that day. This celebration also marks the beginning of another year of your national life and reminds you that the Republic of America is now 76 years old. I am glad, fellow citizens, that your nation is so young. 76 years, though a good old age for a man, is but a mere speck in the life of a nation. 70 years and 10 is the allotted time for individual men. But nations number their years by thousands. According to this fact, you are, even now, only in the beginning of your national career, still lingering in the period of childhood. I repeat, I am glad this is so. There is hope in the thought, and hope is much needed under the dark clouds which lower above the horizon. The eye of the reformer is met with angry flashes, portending disastrous times. But his heart may well beat lighter at the thought that America is young and that she is still in the impressible stage of her existence. May he not hope that high lessons of wisdom, of justice, and of truth will yet give direction to her destiny. Were the nation older, the patriot's heart might be sadder, and the reformer's brow heavier. Its future might be shrouded in gloom, and the hope of its prophets go out in sorrow. There is consolation in the thought that America is young. Great streams are not easily turned from channels worn deep in the course of ages. They may sometimes rise in quiet and stately majesty and inundate the land, refreshing and fertilizing the earth with their mysterious properties. They may also rise in wrath and fury and bear away on their angry waves the accumulated wealth of years of toil and hardship. They, however, gradually flow back to the same old channel and flow on as serenely as ever. But while the river may not be turned aside, it may dry up and leave nothing behind but the withered branch and the unsightly rock, to howl in the abyss-sweeping wind the sad tale of departed glory. As with rivers, so with nations. Fellow citizens, I am not wanting in respect for the fathers of this republic. The signers of the Declaration of Independence were brave men. They were great men, too. Great enough to give frame to a great age. It does not often happen to a nation to raise at one time such a number of truly great men. The point from which I am compelled to view them is not certainly the most favorable. And yet, I cannot contemplate their great deeds with less than admiration. They were peace men, but they preferred revolution to peaceful submission to bondage. They were quiet men, but they did not shrink from agitating against oppression. They showed forbearance, but they knew its limits. They believed in order, but not in the order of tyranny. With them, nothing was settled that was not right. With them, justice, liberty, and humanity were final, not slavery and oppression. You may well cherish the memory of such men. They were great in their day and generation. Their solid manhood stands out the more as we contrast it with these degenerate times. How circumspect, exact, and proportionate were all their movements. How unlike the politicians of an hour. Their statesmanship looked beyond the passing moment and stretched away in strength into the distant future. They seized upon eternal principles and set a glorious example in their defense. Mark them. Fully appreciating the hardships to be encountered, firmly believing in the right of their cause, honorably inviting the scrutiny of an onlooking world, reverently appealing to heaven to attest their sincerity, soundly comprehending the solemn responsibility they were about to assume, wisely measuring the terrible odds against them, your fathers, the fathers of this republic, did most deliberately, under the inspiration of a glorious patriotism and with a sublime faith in the great principles of justice and freedom, lay deep the cornerstone of the national superstructure, which has risen and still rises in grandeur around you. Of this fundamental work, this day is the anniversary. Our eyes are met with demonstrations of joyous enthusiasm. Banners and pennants wave exultingly on the breeze. The din of business, too, is hushed. Even Mammon seems to have quitted his grasp on this day. The ear-piercing fife and the stirring drum unite their accents with the ascending peal of 1,000 church bells. Prayers are made, hymns are sung, and sermons are preached in honor of this day. While the quick martial tramp of a great and multitudinous nation, echoed back by all the hills, valleys, and mountains of a vast continent, bespeak the occasion one of thrilling and universal interest, a nation's jubilee. Fellow citizens, pardon me. Allow me to ask, why am I called upon to speak here today? What have I, or those I represent, to do with your national independence? Are the great principles of political freedom and of national justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us? And am I, therefore, called upon to bring our humble offering to the national altar and to confess the benefits and express devout gratitude for the blessings resulting from your independence to us? Would to God, both for your sakes and ours, that an affirmative answer could be truthfully returned to these questions. Then would my task be light, and my burden easy and delightful. For who is there so cold that a nation's sympathy could not warm him? Who so obdurate and dead to the claims of gratitude that would not thankfully acknowledge such priceless benefits? Who so stolid and selfish that would not give his voice to swell the hallelujahs of a nation's jubilee when the chains of servitude had been torn from his limbs? I am not that man. In a case like that, the dumb might eloquently speak, and the lame man leap as an hart. But such is not the state of the case. I say it with a sad sense of disparity between us. I am not included within the pale of this glorious anniversary. Your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you this day rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence, bequeathed by your fathers, is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought light and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice. I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? If so, there is a parallel to your conduct. And let me warn you that it is dangerous to copy the examples of a nation whose crimes, towering up to heaven, were thrown down by the breath of the Almighty, burying that nation in irrevocable ruin. I can today take up the plaintive lament of a peeled and woe-smitten people. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. Fellow citizens, above your national tumultuous joy, I hear the mournful wail of millions whose chains, heavy and grievous yesterday, are today rendered more intolerable by the jubilee shouts that reach them. If I do forget, if I do not faithfully remember those bleeding children of sorrow this day, may my right hand forget her cunning, and may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. To forget them, to pass lightly over their wrongs, and to chime in with the popular theme would be treason most scandalous and shocking, and would make me a reproach before God and the world.
There's a fine light, baby, I'm on it.
There's a fine line between love and hate. You see, came way too late, but baby, I'm on it. There's a fine line between love and hate. You see, came way too late, but baby, I'm on it. Can't worry about what a thing to see. That's liberation, and baby, I want it. Can't worry about what another think. Now that's liberation, and baby, I want it. Choice to be who you want to be is left up to me, and my mama never told me.
that load off, shake 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 that load off.
You're a superstar. Sing around cause of who you are. You get a lot of love cause of what you got. Say they happy for you but they really not. You sell a lot of records and you roll it in. Just fall up in the spot, now you're losing friends. All you wanna do is give the world your heart. Record label try to make it compromise your art. You make $1 million, make $1 million more. First class broad, treat you like a pole. You wanna say wait, hold but up, you're scared to ask. Your world starts spinning and it's moving fast. Trying to stay sane, it's the price of fame. Spending your life trying to numb the pain. You shake that load off and sing your song. Liberate the minds, then you go on home.
America, independent question mark. Once again, Americans will gather for parades at parks, in bars, and at homes to celebrate the 4th of July holiday, a date marking American independence. Politicians will add heat to the summer air with lofty and lying oaths to the people about freedom, liberty, and the American way. Americans, delirious in the day of independence, will exercise their freedom by getting drunk and eating until they pass out from the carbo-protein load. Americans are about as free as the president allows them to be. Happy Independence Day. Independence in a nation where over 2 million people, men, women, and children, are held in prisons. The most imprisoned people on earth. Happy Independence Day. Where for black Americans, driving, jogging, walking, and standing still on your own doorstep while black is far too often a capital crime. Happy Independence Day, where independence of the mind by a true liberating education is virtually impossible for millions of black, brown, and poor white kids in the richest nation in the history of the world. Happy Independence Day, when the government, under the so-called Patriot Act, can rifle through the homes, files, and papers of people at will. Happy Independence Day indeed. Intake. Americans can celebrate Independence Day, but they can't celebrate independence. The government is increasingly intrusive and growing more and more so every single day. We would do well to heed the wisdom of that great German writer, Johann von Goethe, who observed, "None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free." From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu Jamal.
On the move. I want to thank Mr. Louis Farrakhan and the millions more for the kind invitation to join y'all here. As we gather in person or electronically, we do so in a time of peril. We do so in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, when the state showed us all that they don't give a damn about black life.
The angry leaders that frame Mumia are the same names blamed for Hurricane Katrina. See, the levees would break, the waters would crush, and President Bush, he would forsake the poor and oppressed. So just from the smaller Katrinas, we experience a deadly effects in all arenas. Every year, public schools miseducate the poor, destroying any chance to advance and get more, man. Taxes pay for the oppression we experience. Police too brutal for me to mention. It gets really tense. Consumers of the media filled with ignorance, poisoning our minds with gimmicks and violent images. The daily hurricanes of hate and indifference, experience behind the prison gate on some condition. The courthouse laws and rules they reveal are threats to our welfare and not tools of our will. So just
but every day of our lives we see small but no less lethal Hurricane Katrinas. Every year in public schools, millions of black, Latino, and poor kids are miseducated, thereby destroying
as surely as any hurricane, their life hopes and chance.
Hey. We need the boom in the millions to bring true social power to civilians. Don't gotta swallow the bullshit from the one that you follow and free your mind from the mud that you wallow in. Hey, from the confusion of social repression and destitution, there is only one solution to this intrusion. The movement of millions to bring forth a revolution. Now who's in? Those engaged in the struggle for freedom and justice and the liberation of political prisoners. We need those dedicated to change so that rich and poor children are educated the same. Yeah, we need the movement to resist the fraction that brought you patriot acts but not patriotic actions. We need the movement that ignites, not divides us despite all the trauma. Cause my people are survivors.
We need a movement of millions to build huge social power, to free our minds and our bodies from the mud that we languish in. We need a movement of millions to transform our current social reality of repression and destitution. We need a movement of millions to bring back light to the eyes of our people, to engage in a struggle for freedom, for justice, and for liberation. We need a movement of millions of the poor, of workers, of women, of youth, of students, of prisoners, of all those dedicated to change, to build independent organizations that can't be bought or sold, and will do the work necessary to be free.
This is Hard Knock Radio. That there is Charlie Tuna. The track is Save the People, featuring the voice of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Up next, you hear a bit of Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright with God Damn America. Again, this is Hard Knock Radio. I'm Anita Johnson. Stay tuned.
You have your seats in the presence of the Lord as you pray together with me on this theme for tonight's message, Confusing God and Government. Confusing God and Government. If you were to ask the average Christian, did Jesus cry? Almost every Christian would quote for you that John 11:35 verse, which most Bible students call the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. It is the verse, you will remember, that is found in the middle of the story about the death of Lazarus, the Lord Jesus' friend. Jesus loved Lazarus, his friend. Lazarus had died. Jesus was outside the village of Bethany. He had not yet reached the city limits. Martha had met him, and he and Martha had talked. Martha was mad, and she let the Lord know that she was mad. Jesus had reassured her with words she did not understand. I am the resurrection and the life. Whosoever believeth on me, though he were dead, yet shall he live again, and whosoever liveth and believe shall never die. He had reassured her. She didn't understand those words, but at least he had calmed her down for just a little bit. She left Jesus there and went back to the house and called her sister Mary and told her privately, Jesus is here and he is calling for you. And when Mary heard those words, she got up quickly and went to where Jesus was, just outside of Bethany. When those who were grieving with her saw her get up quickly and go out, they ran along with her. You find that story in John 11. They thought she was going to her brother's grave site to grieve. And when Jesus saw her crying, and when Jesus saw those who were trying to console her crying, he started weeping. The text says he was greatly disturbed in spirit and he was deeply moved. He asked Mary and Martha, "Where have you laid him?" And they said, "Lord, come and see." And he cried. Jesus wept. You know, death will make you weep. When you lose somebody that you love, you will weep. When you lose somebody who is close to you, the tears will come. I ain't telling you about nothing that I read in a book somewhere. I'm telling you what I know from personal experience. I'm not telling you what I studied in pastoral counseling. I'm telling you what I have lived through. When the pain of death hits, and the pain is deep, when the pain of death hits and the pain is personal, when the finality of death comes crashing in on you, and those words, "Never again," move from the region of possibility into the heart-wrenching realm of reality. That smile that made your day, never again will you see it. That laughter that lit up your world, never again will you hear it. That wisdom that anchored your soul, never again will you experience it in this life. When that happens to you, my beloved, you will weep, you will cry. Jesus wept, Jesus cried. And most Christians learn very early in their walk of faith that John 11:35 verse, what does it say? Jesus, come on. You know, that's the first Bible verse you memorized. You used to go around the table having to say a Bible verse for dinner. What's your Bible verse? Jesus wept. But guess what? Guess what? Tonight's text teaches us that that is not the only time that Jesus wept. On this day that we call Palm Sunday, when the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully, as we just read, for all the deeds of power that they had seen. On the Sunday that we call Palm Sunday, as Jesus rode on the colt, on the Sunday before Maundy Thursday, the Sunday before Good Friday, while some of the Pharisees in the crowd tried to stop the praise of the procession that was taking place, on the Sunday before he was put to death on a cross, stretched between two thieves, the Sunday that he said, "If these who are praising me hold their peace, then the rocks will cry out," on the Sunday before he sealed our salvation, as he came near the city, the text we just read said, in the midst of the praise, Luke tells us that he wept over the city. He cried for his people who did not know the things that make for peace. He cried for his people because they were blinded by their culture. They were blinded by their condition. They were blinded by their circumstance. They were blinded by their oppression. They were blinded by being in a spot where they desired, deeply desired, revenge. And they could not see the things that make for peace. We keep forgetting. And we need to remember, Jerome Ross wrote about it. I keep reminding you of it. Write it down so you don't forget. These people had, in Luke 19, an occupying army living in their country. Jesus, in verse 43, calls them their enemies. Say enemies. Their enemies had all the political power. Remember, they had to send Jesus to a court presided over by the enemy. A provisional governor appointed by their enemies ran the civic and the political affairs of their capital. He had backing him up an occupying army with superior soldiers. They were commandos trained in urban combat and trained to kill on command. Remember, it was soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war. An enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom. These people were blinded by the culture of war. Do you know what it is like to live under military rule 24/7, 365? These people were blinded by their circumstance of oppression. because their enemies not only had all of the political power with Governor Pontius Pilate, y'all call him Pontius Pilate, he's Italian, Pontius Pilate, Pontius Pilate was running the provisional government. Their enemies also had the military power. They not only had political power, they had the military power. It was Roman soldiers who kept Jesus up all night. It was the Italian army who led Jesus out to Calvary on Friday morning. It was the occupying military brigade who forced Simon of Cyrene to carry the cross for Jesus. These people were tired of their oppression. They wanted the enemy up out of their land. Some of them did, some of them did. Not the businessmen, not those in bed with the enemy. Let's be clear, let's be clear. But the average citizen wanted them out, and they also wanted revenge. They wanted their king to get this military monkey off their backs. They wanted a regime change, if you will. And look what they called Jesus. Look at it in verse 38. They called Jesus the king. Look at it. Look at it. Look at verse 38. Look at it. They call him the king. Blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. They want their king. See, their king, they saw God, the Lord, getting ready to do something about their situation, blinded by the pain of their situation. They could not see the things that make for peace, y'all. So Jesus cried. Let me help you something. Let me help you. The military does not make for peace. The military only keeps the lid on for a little while. The military doesn't make for peace. And the absence of armed resistance doesn't mean the presence of genuine peace. Somebody needs to hear me tonight. You're not hearing me. War does not make for peace. We said at the 11 o'clock service, fighting for peace is like raping for virginity. War does not make for peace. War only makes for escalating violence and a mindset to pay the enemy back by any means necessary. When your wife or your children have been crushed by the enemy, when your mother or your father have been mowed down by the military, peace is not on your mind. Paybacks is the only game in town. You just bide your time and you wait for your opportunity, but somebody is going to pay dearly for the permanent damage that has come into your life and wrecked your world as it rocked your world. Military might doesn't make for peace. War does not make for peace. Occupying somebody else's country doesn't make for peace. Killing those who fought to protect their own homes doesn't make for peace. Press conferences claiming victory do not make for peace. Regime change, substituting one tyrant for another tyrant with the biggest tyrant pulling the puppet strings of all the tyrants, that does not make for peace. Colonizing a country does not make for peace. If you don't believe me, look at Haiti, look at Puerto Rico, look at Angola, look at Zimbabwe, look at Kenya, look at Astaboys in South Africa. Colonization does not make for peace. Occupation does not make for peace. And subjugation only makes for temporary silence. It does not make for peace. These people who wanted a new king were blinded by their circumstances, and it made Jesus cry because they missed the meaning of his ministry. Turn to your neighbor and say, they missed the meaning of his ministry. When Jesus says, you did not recognize the time of your visitation from God, down to verse 44, Jesus is saying, you did not recognize the time of my ministry. You did not see the meaning of my ministry. You are missing the real things that make for peace. You are confusing external appearances with internal power. You're looking at the man, and you're not looking at the one that the man represents. You are looking at the miracle. That's verse 37, when the deeds of power, they were praising God. Deeds of power, that's the miracle. Sight to the blind, deeds of power. Hearing to the deaf, deeds of power. Speech to the mute, deeds of power. Cleansing of the lepers, deeds of power. Wholeness to the broken, deeds of... You are looking at the miracles and missing the meaning behind the miracle. A miracle is just a sign. A sign only points to something or points the way to something. Don't get fixated located on the sign and miss completely what the sign is pointing to. The deeds of power point to a God who is greater than any physical limitation and a God who can overcome any limiting situation. The things that make for peace, only God can give. Y'all looking to the government for that which only God can give. No wonder he wept. He had good cause to cry. These people under oppression were confusing God and government. Say confusing God and government. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to hang out here homiletically for just a little while, and then I'm going to let you go home. I have got to pause here, however, as a pastor, because a lot of people still confuse, 2,000 years later, they still confuse God with their government. Now, see, we can see clearly the confusion in the mind of a few Muslims. And please notice, I did not say all Muslims. I said a few Muslims who see Allah as condoning killing and killing any and all who don't believe what they believe. They call it jihad. We can see clearly the confusion in their minds, but we cannot see clearly what it is that we do. We call it crusade. When we turn right around and say that our God condones the killing of innocent civilians as a necessary means to an end. We say that God understands collateral damage. We say that God knows how to forgive friendly fire. We say that God will bless the shock and awe as we take over unilaterally another country, calling it a coalition, because we got three guys from Australia going against the United Nations, going against the majority of Christians, Muslims, and Jews throughout the world, making a preemptive strike in the name of God. We cannot see how what we are doing is the same thing Al-Qaeda is doing under a different color flag, calling on the name of a different God to sanction and approve our murder and our mayhem. And let me tell you something. Jesus said something about that too. Oh yes, he did. Jesus said, how can you see the speck in your brother's eye and can't see the log in your own eye? Well, I submit to you that we can't see it, first of all, because we don't see nobody who don't look like us, dress like us, talk like us, worship like us as brother. And Jesus calls them brother. We demonize them, and that makes it all right to kill them, because our God is against demons. Then we can't see the speck, most of all, because we equate our government with our God. We confuse government and God. Let me tell you something. We believe in this country, and we teach our children that God sent us to this promised land. He sent us to take this country from the Arawak, the Susquehanna, the Apache, the Comanche, the Cherokee, the Seminole, the Choctaw, the Hopi, and the Arapaho. We confuse government and God. We believe God sanctioned the rape and robbery of an entire continent. We believe God ordained African slavery. We believe God makes Europeans superior to Africans and superior to everybody else too. We confuse God and government. We said in our founding documents, as a government, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Created, that means God, and endowed with a certain inalienable right, that means given by God. And then we define Africans in those same documents as three-fifths of a person. We believe God approved of African slavery. We believe God approved segregation. We believe God approved apartheid. And the doctrine which says that all men are created more equal than other men. And we're talking about white men. We confuse God and government. We believe God approves of 6% of the people on the face of this earth controlling all of the resources on the face of this earth, while the other 94% live in poverty and squalor, while we give trillions of dollars of tax breaks to the white rich. We believe God was a founding member of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Look at the lily whiteness of the G7 nation the next time you see a picture, and then tell me if you see anything wrong with that picture when you hold it up against the picture of the color of the world's population. We confuse God and government. We believe God is on the side of the wealthy. We believe this all
necessary to die. In Iraq and anywhere else we decide is a part of the axis of evil, while George W. cuts the military benefits so that when those boys and girls come back home, they can be as bad off as some of the Iraqis that we just liberated. We confuse God and government. We do. We believe. We have a right to Iraqi oil. We believe we have a right to Venezuelan oil. We believe we got a right to all the oil on the face of the earth. And we got the military to take it if necessary. Or as George W. piously says, as God so leads him. We confusing God and government. We believe it is all right to decimate the Afro-Colombian community by arming the paramilitary with United States tax dollars, our dollars, a hired military whose real job is to protect the oil line owned by United States companies tied to the presidency, which was stolen by the oil interest. We confusing God and government. And it gets worse. It gets worse. We've got a paranoid group of patriots in power that now, in the interests of homeland stupidity, I mean homeland security, they are taking away the constitutional right of free speech because it's harmful to the interests of national security. And those interests equate God with government. Our money says in God we trust. And our military says we will kill you under the orders of our commander-in-chief if you dare to believe otherwise. We are still confusing God and government in the year 2003, just like they confuse it in Luke 19. Well, in case you are in that great number, and I understand from the polls that the number has gone up, still confused. If you're in that number of confused folk 2,000 years after Christ, let me share three quick things with you just to help clear up your confusion. Turn to your neighbor and say, now listen, you got to say it right. Say it with attitude and with ebonics. Say he. Sidney, help somebody tonight. Turn on the other side and say, Fidna. Government, number one. Governments lie. This government lied about their belief that all men were created equal. The truth is they believed all white men were created equal. The truth is they did not believe that even white women were created equal in creation nor in civilization. The government had to pass an amendment to the Constitution to get white women to vote. Then the government had to pass an equal rights amendment to get equal protection under the law for women. The government still thinks a woman has no rights over her own body, and between Uncle Clarence, who sexually harassed Anita Hill, and a closeted Klan court that is a throwback to the 19th century, handpicked by Daddy Bush, Ronald Reagan, Gerald Ford, hung between Clarence and that stacked court. They're about to undo Roe versus Wade, just like they're about to undo affirmative action. The government lied in its founding documents, and the government is still lying today. Governments lie. Turn to your neighbors and go.
One summer, I wanted to celebrate the 4th of July. You know, my brother went nuts. He was like, you want to celebrate the 4th of July? Oh, brother, you lost. See, because a black man ain't had no independence, 1776. You can look at that word, 4th of July. Break it down. You can see it ain't for the black man. Four, see that? That represents 400. That's 400 years of slavery, 400 years of oppression. Look at the word July. Break it down. Jew, lie. Jews, lie. Jews, lie. 400 years of Jews' lies. Now, damn, I didn't look at it that way. I'm just trying to go to a picnic. Picnic, did you use that word picnic? Break that down. Picnic. Pick a nigga. You better be careful, you ain't be the nigga they pick.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again, Sam and Dad.
else should just imitate the simulation. Step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out Anita and Davey D. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio. Kinda crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Thank you. Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
What does the average KBOO listener think of self-help radio?
This is so hard and complicated.
I have no idea what it is.
What is this old-time music?
I feel so proud of myself.
It seems kind of worthless.
Why does it have to make so much noise?
It feels very